Let's explore the crazy new trend that all the kids are talking about. Cryptocurrency. And then, let us take a look at the life of the madman, the prophet, Grigori Rasputin. And then, let us all acknowledge the greatness of Lord Frollo. Tonight on Deep Fat Fried.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy stuff right now, y'all.
God damn you for sneaking in another fucking Frollo.
Pretty goddamn crazy shit right now, y'all.
Trollo.
You know what, TJ? I think I know why TJ likes Frollo so much.
Hold up. You fucking all frame stupid, you retard.
Well, you're the one that framed us, retard. So here's my theory on why TJ loves Frollo. Because can't you see TJ in, like, what is it, like 17th century France or some shit? TJ would be a Frollo, dude. He would. Because TJ would, he'd be attracted to the power of the church. But he'd have all this, like, these feelings he has now, like, repressed because he wouldn't be allowed to be like he actually is now. So he'd be a fucking Frollo. He'd be fucking singing songs.
Yeah.
He'd be chasing gypsy boys, though.
Oh, yeah, he would.
Bring me that sweet gypsy boy.
Gypsy
ass.
Boy ass. I must fuck it.
Bring that gypsy boy over here now.
TJ pay like half a fucking coin to
all
fuck
all right, gypsy boy,
gypsy
I'll give
boy.
You half a shilling to fuck my face.
Whoa.
Speaking of shilling, Patreon. The DFF Patreon is a thing still.
It exists.
It has one tier level and one tier level only.
And by the way, we want to thank everyone because we just hit 500. So
nice.
Thank
you guys. Yeah, 500.
Thank
500
you guys.
Patrons.
So that means you patrons
and as
get
you
to
guys,
decide on an episode.
It doesn't even list this on the Patreon yet, but those who are already patrons know this. We do release these Monday episodes on Sunday night. For patrons, we do an audio. We release the audio version to them directly on Patreon. So not only do you get special access to the Friday episodes, which are exclusive to patrons or will be next month, but you also get early access to the Monday show as well. And I'm sure we'll do some little bonus shows for the for our patrons as well.
That's really cool. So at the at 500, they get to choose an episode.
Yep.
They get to we should let them choose a public episode so that everybody has to see what the patrons decided.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be cool.
Sure.
Yeah, they can choose. Yeah, I think that was the 500.
It
the
was.
Perk for the 500.
And it
for
is.
Our first
it was.
500.
It is.
Yes.
And we've made it. So
cool.
Awesome.
So we'll be. If you're a patron, tune into your Patreon because we will be asking you guys to help us. Decide an episode. You'll be able to select one on your own.
I guess it's going to be really the first one that you guys know well in advance.
Yeah, that's true. This is going to be the first time we've ever announced an episode in advance, I think, other than the promotion we did for the last one. But I think the stream was already started by then, so whatever. Anyway, Patreon down below. We have one level, $5. That's all. That's our only monetization on this channel so far. We don't run ads. We don't have fucking merchandise yet. You know, we're not doing Streamlabs on this show. It's all through Patreon. So if you want to support Deep Fat Fry, that's the way to fucking do it. So today we're going to be talking, first of all, about cryptocurrency.
I'm glad we're covering this.
Because you feel like you need to learn. Huh?
I feel like I'm a retard when it comes to this. I feel like everybody knows what's going on and everybody's making handfuls of fucking cash left and right. And I'm just like, I don't even know what that is.
What the hell's happening?
What it is.
There's something happening here.
There's a lot of people that have made a lot of money in cryptocurrency, Paul. But like any other investment tool, a lot of people have fucking lost everything on cryptocurrency.
Well, that's why you should never invest more than you can afford to lose.
That's why it's a little scary to me, because it kind of feels like a casino right now. And I don't have the money to go put a bunch of money in a goddamn casino and gamble it.
Fair enough. So I thought we'd start off with a glossary of cryptocurrency terms.
Oh, good. Because a lot of times when people talk about this shit, I have no fucking clue what they're like. I got my blockchain and my blah, 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 blah. I got my flipto in crypto.
I got my blah, 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 flipto.
Flipto.
Full disclaimer,
crypto,
Paul
dipto,
has
shipto.
Been sipping on a daiquiri for the
what?
Last several hours.
No.
Paul. No.
Oh, my God.
No. Paul described it as like Ashley got me some pizza, and the pizza place happened to have daiquiris. Yeah.
I hate the South and I love the South because the pizza place I wanted to get pizza from was closed today because, of course, it's the South and Jesus, we're done born today, so we don't work. But this other place was pizza and daiquiris. And so I got like a pizza and I got a big gallon of daiquiri that I've been just slowly sipping on for the last hour.
It's so definitely good.
And now you get to learn about cryptocurrency.
And God now bless you the get South. To learn.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Terms.
All right.
Give me the terms.
The glossary.
Time for some glossary. Okay, so the first term here,
altcoin or alternative coin.
It's a short for alternative coin. Okay,
altcoin,
cryptocurrency that has all the attributes of Bitcoin. However, it does not use the same blockchain, so it does not have the same genesis blocks. Altcoins rules are generally not compatible with Bitcoin. Basically,
we're gonna have to skip ahead a few for me to understand what the fuck that was saying.
The simple explanation is it's any coin that's not Bitcoin.
No, I would argue now that there's some pretty mainstream ones that other people consider like main coins.
Okay. ANN, I don't know what that is, or ANN, I'm not sure.
Announcement.
Is an acronym for announcement. You will see ANN next to new cryptocurrency. Okay, whatever. Who cares? It's an announcement. ATH is an acronym for all-time high. So if you see ATH, that means just the highest price, the crypto.
It's like, oh, ATH on this fucking crypto.
Yeah.
So if we're looking at a particular coin and we want to know what's the highest it's ever been, that'd be the
ATH. Yeah, so Bitcoin's ATH was like, what, 20,000?
Yes,
something like that
something
per
like
coin.
It's around there. Bag holder, someone who is holding a large amount of cryptocurrency. The cryptocurrency language is evolving with the technology. New words come up and get added to the existing lexicon. With these 15 words, you will fit right in and keep the conversation. Why is this?
What?
This seems like the intro.
Yeah, this seems like somebody accidentally copy-pasted something into this article that wasn't supposed to be there.
Oh, well. Bear whale.
Maybe we should find that. The 15 words that we need, we fit right in and keep up, dude.
Yeah, there you
Where
go.
Are those?
I don't know, dude. Bear whale. I know what a whale is, but we won't get to that till later. But a bear whale is a whale that uses their influence to suppress prices. The bear whale of 2014 was the most memorable. A large $9 million sell order of 30,000 bitcoins on Bitstamp prevented price from rising any higher, forcing the market to flatline.
Jesus, you know, the person that sold 30,000 probably wishes they would have sold in their like 15, 20,000.
The market, however, was intent on a bull run. Persistent buying activity chewed through the large order, leading to the slaying of the bear
whale. Oh, shit.
There you go.
Damn.
I like how like they try to make a mythology. The slaying.
Slaying of the great bear whale of 2014.
And the mighty crypto warriors slew and slay, and the bear whale fell before them.
A bit is a unit used to designate a subunit of Bitcoin. Pretty simple. Bitcoin, everyone knows what that is. Bitcoin address, that's just where you're holding it or
are you
sending
receive,
it.
Yeah.
Bitcoin exchanges, just places where you can buy Bitcoin or altcoins.
Trade it, yeah, where you can trade Bitcoin.
Your wallet, you understand that.
Yeah, I mean, that's easy enough.
Exchange it.
Block height, I don't know.
No idea what that is.
This refers to the number of blocks preceding the Genesis block, first block on the chain. Genesis blocks have heights of zero because nothing precedes them. Wow, they're like God.
This sounds like some unmade maker. Sounds like a speech that a villain in a sci-fi movie would give. Genesis blocks have heights of zero because nothing precedes them.
Yeah, it does. Block reward. These rewards go to the miners who hash the block. Hash means to solve the mathematical equation that creates the block.
Oh, there you go.
So blockchain, you said you didn't know what this one was, Paul.
Yeah, that's true.
And we do have a how does cryptocurrency work thing that explain it a little further. Blockchain, this is a data system that acts as a digital ledger of transactions. Through cryptocurrency, the network is protected. It is comprised of so-called blocks that contain records of transactions.
So, like, every Bitcoin has a blockchain showing who sold it when attached to it? Is that what I'm
getting? They're all part of the blockchain.
It's like a ledger, so it has every transaction. So if you send it, receive it, buy it, whatever, it's all there.
So Bitcoin has one blockchain that covers all purchases and sell orders and shit. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
I'll just cover the major ones here. Fiat is kind of interesting because this is that's actually the proper term for our, like, the U.S. dollar
fiat
or something.
Currency or euros, but or whatever.
In the cryptocurrency, any sort of government backed currency.
Correct.
That's not, you know, tied to a gold standard or something like that. But fiat in the crypto world is a derogatory term referring to traditional currencies issued by governments and central banks. Cryptocurrency communities generally despise the effects of fiat currency on the economic imbalance in the world. Fiat money is based on fractional reserve banking that is heavily tilted in favor of banks at the expense of the populace. Cryptocurrencies are an alternative to the fiat banking system.
Oh, man, there was a lot of spite in that fucking definition.
I mean, aren't cryptocurrencies technically fiat currencies?
Fight the power.
Because they, I mean, I know they're not issued by a government, but they aren't backed by any kind of physical product.
Yeah,
right?
And they kind of...
Some of them are actually backed by products.
Yeah, a lot are actually backed by something, and they...
Like what?
Well, like Steemit or something, for example.
What is it backed by, though?
Content that people are watching.
And there's a reward pool that's put in. Isn't it basically put in by the people who are using the site?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's driven by the value of the currency itself. I mean, the site generate. We'll actually be looking at Steemit in a little bit. So,
but there are cryptocurrencies that are based on, like, actual projects. Not all of them. There's some that are just, like, evil coin, which is, like, what is it about? We don't really know. You know, there's, like...
It's a coin and it's evil. But a lot of them, even if they're not backed by something, they do kind of... they're not like fiat currency in that they... They basically try to fucking artificially have scarcity. Like, you know how there's, like, a limited supply of gold in the world or something like that? So they fucking, okay, well... This currency is backed by gold. So, like, they have, like, a gold standard kind of system.
But, understood.
They just artificially say, okay, well, only this many Bitcoins can ever exist and no more can ever be created.
Yeah, it's like, what, like 23 million or something?
So
or 16 million or something.
So,
like that.
Yeah, basically, they have an artificial scarcity. It's not like the federal government where they can just print more and more money. Now, some cryptocurrencies do have that where they can just print more. Not print, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, basically,
can't they split Bitcoins though? So doesn't that kind of make it a moot point?
It's called a fork. It's where they create a new cryptocurrency.
Yeah, we're not going to print more. We're just going to split the coin again.
There you go.
It's kind of like that, yeah.
I mean, you can't split a Bitcoin.
Yeah, you don't really split it.
I mean, you can split it in the sense that you can own a fraction of a Bitcoin.
Well, Bitcoin's based on, like, if you're the term mining, it's basically what they're doing is solving mathematical equations in order to get these rewards.
Well, when they talk about the people adding and subtracting from the ledger, those are the miners of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are maintaining the blockchain, basically, and they get Bitcoin rewards.
And Bitcoin mining at this point is fucking hugely expensive.
Oh, yeah. So here's another term. I see that this one is one FUD. I actually see come up a lot. FUD is an acronym for fear, uncertainty, and doubt. FUD is any intended claim to instill fear in the market to cause market sell-offs or spread misinformation to keep people away from certain opportunities. And you'll see this a lot. Like, anytime you're in a sort of like Bitcoin, you know, like forum or something, you know, people will say, oh, you know, if someone says something bad about the coin, they're almost always accused by someone of FUDing.
Yeah, you're FUDing.
You know, it's like, oh,
hey, guys, Warren Buffett said cryptocurrency's crazy. Fuck, shut up, you fucking FUDing piece of shit.
Quit FUDing, bitch.
FUDing.
I see this a lot. Well, like me and Scotty invested in a cryptocurrency called Electra. And the exchange that sold it basically
collapsed.
Has been down for like a month and a half, 2 months. And there's kind of a lot of argument in the community about whether or not the site is ever coming back or if they just ran away with the money.
Cool.
So it's basically like, and whenever someone's like, you know, let's be honest, guys, coins markets ain't never coming back. If they were going to come back, they'd be back by now. And then the people who are still... like gullible saps are like, you just FUDing, bitch.
Which I guess it could come back, but
just waiting.
Yeah, the point is that, well, I mean, luckily we didn't even invest that much money, but there's a lot of people that actually invested like thousands of dollars in this cryptocurrency.
It's like, but I mean, like, it's comical because it's just like both sides are pretty comical on it, honestly. And the coins market site itself is hilarious because it's been down forever. And like every once in a while, they'll add like a new message giving their latest excuse, like, you know, we're switching servers. Okay, we switch servers. It'll be up in a matter of hours. Problem with this server. Got to switch servers again.
Switching again.
Problem with our web host.
I'm sorry. My grandmama died. I
got a few
go
database errors we got to solve, you know?
Wow. I wonder if that's just a bot with like some rotating excuses that they put up.
Excuse bot 9000. The thing that doesn't make sense is they could just, the site could just go away and they, you know, no one knows who fucking runs it or anything. They could just vanish into the fucking sunset.
That's kind of the point about cryptocurrency, especially like those altcoins like Electra.
I mean, yeah, it's like the fucking Wild
West. Those other like really small coins with small market caps. It's like they could just take the money and run. Who knows what will happen with that? But that's just an example of FUDing is when shit like this happens, which is common with both Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, like shit like this happens, like people invest in some coin on some shitty server and it just disappears or gets hacked and everything gets stolen.
So it's the kind of, but like, it sounds like to me that people just throw it around too much, like cuck or
whatever. Oh, yeah.
Like anytime that you have any kind of doubt about a new coin or some practice of some coin issue, or you're FUDing.
Yes, exactly correct. You see, you're getting it.
Okay, got it.
All right, so this is another one I like a lot. HODL, an intentional mistyping of the word hold, meaning to hold on to a cryptocurrency trading position. The word originated from a typo by a trader sharing his strategy in a furious price decline. The word was picked up by the community and quickly rose, stuck to one of the most popular terms in the cryptocurrency market. When you HODL, I don't know how you'd pronounce it, or if you just say hold, you are committed irrespective of any price declines. It's frequently used by fundamentalists whose faith in their cryptocurrency holdings is unshakable. So basically idiots.
Right.
Who are just like, no matter what happens, hold. They think they're like William Wallace or some shit. Hold. Hold. You know,
this is weird.
Well, I mean, it makes sense from an investment point because for the most part, if you just ride the market, the volatility of the market, if you ride it long enough and the cryptocurrency sticks around, is actually still there's an application for it, you'll probably end up making money in the long run. But that doesn't hold for everything. Like obviously ones like Electra, these
HODL
or HODL, whatever.
HODL.
These small coins like we're talking about, or just whatever little small bullshit altcoin you're talking about. It's really easy for someone to get wrapped up in like, it's going to go up. It's going to, what's called mooning. It's going to go to the fucking moon. You know, and of course it doesn't. And they're just like, I'm going to hold it for life. I'm just going to keep holding, hold. So it's, and then you have people come in. Well, I don't know. I don't think it's going to go to a dollar. I don't think it's going to go to 50 cents. FUD. So like you'll see this, these terms thrown back and forth at each other just constantly in forums.
They're almost the rebuttals of one another.
Yeah, they kind of are.
Initial coin offerings, ICOs, pretty fucking easy to understand.
Yeah, not a good idea for the most part, but they happen.
Mining, this is what we were talking about earlier. The process is how transactions or blocks are appended to the blockchain. During the process, transactions are compiled into blocks. The process and the blockchain help to create consensus on the networks about which of the two transactions will be confirmed as valid.
Okay, how do people make money doing that? Because I've heard that people just like make their living doing mining.
Because they get rewards for the coin they're mining.
Oh.
They essentially get coins in exchange for them doing the mining.
Like some of the people who were early adopters of Bitcoin mining are now super rich, basically.
Yes.
Moon, Scotty just kind of talked about that one, refers to an extremely high cryptocurrency price. Basically like, oh, it's going to the moon. When will Bitcoin moon? Fasten your seatbelts. We're about to go to the moon. Payment processors. I mean, that should be pretty
peer-to-peer. We kind of already heard. We already know about that.
Pump and dump.
Pump and dump.
No, I know this term because
of your bedroom performance.
But yeah, exactly. No, this term was used a lot in the financial sector during the 2008 crisis.
Pump and dump.
The idea of taking a shitty stock, artificially inflating its price, dumping all your stock, and you know,
and leaving everyone else holding it.
Yeah,
yeah. Wrecked. I think we. That's not just a.
I mean, we get wrecked.
Shill. Self-serving individuals who promote any cryptocurrency for a quick buck. Cool. I'd do it. Anyone wants me to shill their shit coin, I'll do it. Speaking of shit coins, That's a derogatory term for cryptocurrencies that become worthless over time, have no utility, or are pure scams. Cryptocurrency adopters are extremely loyal to one or several cryptocurrencies. Sometimes people within a particular community will deride other cryptocurrencies by labeling them shitcoins.
So anything that's not your favorite is a shitcoin.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
I don't like that coin. That's a shitcoin. The last one we'll go to is whales. A wealthy individual or group of traders with significant control on cryptocurrency market prices due to their extraordinarily large holdings. They can single-handedly force price declines by instantly selling off large amounts. Conversely, they can buy up orders and push prices higher. So basically the people responsible for the pump and dumps.
Right.
Yeah. And you see these all over the fucking place.
Oh, dude, I've seen pump and dumps of like, there's this coin called like Ember Coin, and it was at like 50ths of like 10,000th of a cent or something, some extremely extremely low, and then it was pumped up like 12,000%, and of course like people were like, should I buy, and of course people ended up buying it, and the price just dropped even lower than, you know,
because the dude that owned all of it was like, all right.
Oh yeah, people knew that it was time. Well, I think they were forking off, and there's all kinds of times where like people know that the currencies are changing names or rebranding or doing shit. They'll pump it up really high because they know they're either going to get more out of value out of it, or they just want to like make a quick buck. And it's kind of funny, people give this shit about fiat currency like you were saying, TJ, but a lot of people, these whales, totally manipulate the market. I mean, they pretty much do. They pretty much control so much of the market, especially on these altcoins, that it's really easy for them just to fucking make money. It's like an ATM. They all go, okay, let's everyone buy, pump, pump, pump. Okay, now it's all sell.
Yeah.
Which they coordinate. They're in these like Discords and these other groups, and they're coordinating all this activity.
I think it's funny that like Bitcoin arose as kind of like a challenge to these government issued currencies and the manipulation that they're subject to. And like, basically the same structure has emerged in the Bitcoin market from what it sounds like. You've got like these big giant, you know, whales, I guess those would be corporations that own, you know, that can manipulate the market by selling or buying significant amounts of stock.
Yeah.
It just sounds very like a very similar structure of manipulation.
It's like human
developed.
It's like human nature is just, you know, the same no matter what.
Yeah, I mean you even noticed a lot of the terms that you hear in the regular stock market have transitioned or in some form or another the crypto markets, because a lot of the same kind of shit happens.
The essence of how Bitcoin works, non-technical.
For
idiots like us.
Good.
This is the idiot's guide to how the fuck Bitcoins even work.
The complete dummy's guide to Bitcoin.
To explain the essence of how Bitcoin works without any jargon or scary math. It is not, however, an introduction to what Bitcoin is or why it matters. For that, check out the great intro video at bitcoin.org. With that said, on to how it works.
You retard.
Bitcoin lets people exchange money electronically as easily as sending an email or text. To send money, you use what's called a wallet app to type in an amount.
Hold on. If an email or text took like 9 days to send...
Yeah, is it not that fast?
No.
Bitcoin, that little fucking like, whee, the coin goes right to the next person. That's bullshit.
Yeah, there's cryptocurrencies that are pretty fast, but yeah, it's
Bitcoin
not.
Bitcoin is not
it's
one.
It's not like a text message.
Yeah, it is not. It takes a while.
Recipient's account number and hit send. The recipient will then see the money pop up in their account.
Instantly.
So how does this work? At a basic level, Bitcoin is just a ledger with account numbers and balances. When Bob sends Carol 5 bitcoins, his balance goes down by 5 and Carol's up by 5. There's no gold or government-issued money backing these numbers, just people's belief that the numbers are worth something, and a system that prevents unfair changes. Part of the system makes sure no one can spend money from someone else's account. Every time you hit send, your wallet app sends a message to the Bitcoin network describing how the ledger should change, including the sender's and recipient's account numbers and amount to transfer. So what's to prevent a thief from creating a message transferring money from someone else's account? Bitcoin requires a kind of signature on each message to prove that it was created by the true account owner. The signature serves the same purpose as a handwritten signature on a paper check, but it's based on math rather than handwriting. The math comes from the world of cryptography, which is normally used to hide secret messages, but in Bitcoin has been repurposed to prove ownership.
So basically, You just take a bunch of nothing and we say, all right, this nothing has value. And I am transferring this much of my nothing to you. And we're all just intersubjectively agreeing this is of value and has worth.
Yeah, and there's basically a key so you can understand the message. And that so when this network reads it, it knows it's a legitimate transaction.
And there's a bunch of like, you know, yeah, it's like all there's these huge. Yeah, hence the cryptocurrency thing. There's a they use cryptography to fucking encode shit. So you can't figure out. No one can just be like, all right, I'm going to go in there and steal this person's shit. Because
well, somebody has access to that shit, though, right?
You can look at the blockchain. You can look at it. Like you said, that's
but there's
a
no way to tie that to the person, though.
No, right? That's why a lot of people. That's why like the Silk Road and shit. There was like, there were, you know, people were murdering people online and shit for Bitcoin. That's essentially what they were doing because they could receive that money. And then basically launder the money easily. Like, it's not even really money. They can take that and exchange it for money.
So you create an account, right, with a wallet.
Yeah.
So that information has to be viewable by somebody along the
way. Yeah, but a lot of times it was done in countries where no one really gave a shit.
Right.
And a lot of these things, they're registered in one country, but who knows where the actual servers are located.
Right.
I mean, just because you're registered in one country, you can be registered in any tax haven or you could the just Ukraine or VPN. Wherever, Russia. And no one's going to actually come and kick down your door in those countries for doing this kind of shit. So that's probably all these places, I think, operate in gray areas. Not all of them, though.
Each Bitcoin account
is pretty fucking mainstream now, though.
Well, yeah, like there's
I've seen like kiosks and gas stations where it's like, yeah, buy you some Bitcoin. It's like, OK, pretty mainstream.
Number has an associated key that only the true account owner knows and is used to create signatures by encrypting transaction messages. Others test the signature by trying to decrypt it. If successful, they know the signature was created by the true account owner. In addition to not relying on handwriting analysis, these math-based signatures can't be copied and reused on other transactions, since the signatures are unique to each transaction. So these signatures keep unauthorized transactions from changing the ledger, but who exactly is checking the signatures and, overall, maintaining the ledger? Surprisingly, anyone who wants to. One of the main goals of Bitcoin is to provide a decentralized system, meaning no single company or government can control it. Every time someone sends money, a
unless you're a huge whale that can
manipulate
the market,
see, that's
at
the
will.
Problem.
You can manipulate the price, but you can't manipulate the ledger, is what they're saying. I mean, unless you hacked it.
Which hasn't happened yet.
Transaction message is passed
some
around.
Some exchanges have been hacked, though.
What about, I've heard that a lot of this Bitcoin security is going to be threatened by quantum computing and shit, though. Like, if we get an advanced enough AI, it might actually be able to figure it out.
Well, yeah. Like, that's what's limiting the ability for people to just decrypt these things now, is that, you know, our computers, you know, can't handle. But, like, yeah, dude, quantum computing will blow that wide open.
But they'll probably will be a response to that also takes into effect quantum computing, though. I mean, the quantum processing
Some coins are already banking on that fear and basically saying, like, our encryptions are so strong that they're quantum computer proof and shit.
I mean, quantum computing, like, if that actually happens, if we actually come up with that, that's like our next wheel fire moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it changes everything.
It changes everything. I'm going to speed this video up a little.
Ledger, who all call maintainers. Each maintainer keeps a personal copy of the ledger and...
It's too fast.
...updates it whenever they receive a new transaction with a valid signature. With ledger spread all over the world, traffic delays and occasionally fraud can lead to differences in those ledgers. So how does the world decide which version to use? Like in other democratic systems, there's a vote, but it's a bit different than a typical ballot system. Maintainers vote by trying to solve a special puzzle based on their version of the ledger. The first person to solve a puzzle announces their solution, and everyone updates to that version. So the vote turns out to be a kind of mathematical race, but it's designed to favor the majority's version. This is because the more people there are working on a particular version, the faster it will be solved.
So basically, I mean, it's not...
I don't like this.
It's like, well, most of our ledgers say this, so that must be
the truth.
So
if I sell some Bitcoin and I just happen to get the dude that's, you know, the group that's bad at math that day, or the group that's hung over and they don't solve the problem right, I get fucked. They're like, well, nope, this ledger won the math race, so sorry. Your $500 just went away.
Yeah.
Like, oh, shit.
Well, that's kind of the... I mean, yeah, in a way it's scary, but it's also the appeal to a lot of people is that the decentralization thing is powerful because you're talking about people who don't want the government interference in their activities. Like, this actively appeals to people who are kind of on like more of the fringes of society that don't really like fiat currency and who want some sort of alternative. So that to them doesn't really necessarily sound bad because they just like, as long as it's not controlled by one person, it's more fair because all these people are maintaining and the people with the best math ultimately will come to that conclusion faster is what they're betting on.
So all I need to do is become like a supervillain that gets the best mathematicians on the planet, introduce a shitty ledger on every transaction and have them solve the puzzle first.
Yeah, how simple that is, Paul. we're looking forward
because
to
new transactions are constantly being generated. This voting process repeats over and over again, so maintainers can continually agree about new transactions. So why math problems instead of, say, emailing in votes to decide on a ledger? Without a central authority to register voters, it would be hard to enforce one vote per person. A single person could create multiple accounts to vote more than once, or even millions of times.
How are you enforcing one person per trying to figure out this ledger shit? See, I don't like this ledger shit. This, like, well, we got some conflicting ledgers, so let's just have a foot race to find out which one's real. Go. You know, fuck that shit.
It's a mathematical foot race.
Well, whatever. Still, in like, that can be manipulated.
In all I mean, it probably could. But in all probability, the correct ledger will win.
Says you.
Have a cost in computers and electricity. This means outvoting or out-solving the majority to take over the ledger.
Yeah, quit fudding, Paul.
I'm fudding
this fudding bullshit.
Hold.
You gotta hobble,
effectively
dude.
Require outspending the majority, an unlikely event. So the math enables a fair vote in a decentralized system. Two more important details about how it does this. To prevent someone from pre-solving a puzzle to win the race, each puzzle builds on previous answers, and the winner is not just the most recent solution, but the ledger version with the most total solutions. The puzzles are also extraordinarily special in that there are no tricks to solving them faster, other than by buying more computers and electricity.
Solutions.
It's this property that underlies the entire system and gives people assurance that the solutions are truly from the majority and not a clever attacker. A final note about how money is created.
They've thought of everything, Paul. They've thought of everything.
Pitiful Paul.
Outsmarted again, Paul.
They put a backdoor in this shit, dude. There is no fucking way.
There's someone out there that all the Bitcoins just go to them.
Yep.
On this date, all Bitcoin will revert to me and sell instantly.
They've got, dude, there's no way that this, like, it was made by human beings, so there's no way that this isn't full of fucking holes like Swiss cheese and somebody's not manipulating this.
Oh, there's definitely
shit.
Ways to exploit and manipulate the system, but I mean, that's in any system you're going to have. I mean, let's take social welfare. Like, there's people that lie and say, oh, I have all these ailments. There's people that lie about health problems. There's people that lie and say they're disabled. I mean, every system is rife with fraud and abuse. It's just how much and how much are you willing to accept.
A puzzle is solved. A small award is added to the solver's balance, effectively creating money out of thin air. This award acts as an incentive for people to help maintain the ledger and is in addition to small fees senders attach to transactions. Because maintainers acquire newly created money through computation, they are typically called miners, but their main purpose is really to manage the ledger, not to create money. The voting system simply provides a convenient way to randomly distribute money into the world, and in fact, after 2140, no more money will be created. In summary, Bitcoin is an electronic currency that's been...
How do you motivate people to continue doing the mining when no new currency will be created?
Well, hopefully by then you've got a quantum computers that can do it for you. You know what I mean? You don't need people to maintain it anymore.
Effectively maintain ledgers. People transfer money by sending messages to maintainers describing where and how much money should move. Maintainers make sure that the messages are from the true account owners by checking digital signatures. And finally, the maintainers reach consensus with each other through a math-based voting process. I hope this gives you a quick sense for how Bitcoin works. If you'd like to dive deeper into the rabbit hole, check out my 22-minute video, How Bitcoin Works Under the Hood.
Yeah, this is kind of a rabbit hole.
Yeah, you're not gonna emerge from this episode being like, now I know all there is to know about cryptocurrency.
I understand.
I get it.
At the best, it's like a fucking shitty springboard into your cryptocurrency education.
Do you know absolutely nothing about cryptocurrency? Watch three fucking retarded stoners try to fumble their way through the topic.
Like, the coin does, like, the chain goes here, and then the currency is good.
I don't trust these math nerds, man. They built the bomb.
They built the bomb.
These fucking math nerds. Like, they built this whole thing.
Yeah, you know
just
what else they invented,
scam.
Paul? These math people, they're fucking pocket pussy, dude. They invented that for you too, buddy. Didn't see you complain last night.
What? My pocket pussy?
Your pocket?
Dude, who even has a pocket pussy anymore?
Besides you, I don't know.
Like, I don't maintain a pocket pussy anymore.
Anymore? Yeah, shit, I mean, Paul. I was thought some shady. I didn't know you actually owned one at some point. Never mind.
I mean, everybody's had a pocket
everybody's
pussy,
Everybody's
right?
experimented with TJ, a pocket
TJ
pussy.
TJ has broken his, though.
A pocket pussy.
My dick was too small. It wasn't even...
It wasn't effective.
Yeah, it was like throwing a toothpick in a mine shaft.
You bought a used one, though. That was your problem, TJ. You bought a used... Probably from Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I stretched it out.
I just stole one of Paul's old ones, you know. Let's see. What do I got here? I got a few more things. Whatever. This is just some fucking industry forecast bullshit. Who cares? So here's one.
Industry forecasting of cryptocurrency is a joke anyways.
That's what I'm saying.
In December, it was all like, buy, 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 everyone buy. Nothing will ever go down. Buy, buy. January, sell, 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 sell.
So here's a look at the market right now.
So Bitcoin's worth about $10,697.
And you see, this is a down day for the market. It used to kind of be there was like a seesaw with this shit where when Bitcoin was up, everything else went down and vice versa.
Dude, Ripple has dropped a ton.
But now it's just kind of like there's just days where the entire market goes down and up and shit. So it's almost like to some extent, it kind of feels like it's all too tied together to the point where it almost doesn't matter which one you have your fucking money in.
Yeah.
But
the top 10 has definitely changed since last time I looked.
Yeah. So here we go. Here's just an example of some coins here. I mean, obviously, Bitcoin is number one. You can even see up here the percentage of Bitcoin market dominance. So basically, Bitcoin accounts for 36.9% of the entire market right now.
Okay.
Used to be much higher. But that just kind of shows you how much larger it is than like everything else listed here.
You also see the market cap. So the market cap for Bitcoin is 180 billion.
There you go. Whereas it's the next closest is Ethereum at 91.
Yeah, it's about half.
Yeah, a little bit over half, I think. Yeah. But yeah, there's just so many fucking coins. It's crazy. This one here, Steam, is the thing that Steemit is built on, and it's a top 30 coin at this point. This fucking coin right here, the creator of this coin, this Doge coin, actually has written articles about how it's preposterous that this coin is even a thing because he created it as a joke.
Sweet. And
he was basically doing like an expose on how easy it is to create just these ridiculous coins. And at this point, it's like a top 100 coin, top 50, really. And it's just based on memes, basically.
It's backed by memes?
Backed by memes, dude.
Fuck me. How does that even work? Explain that to me.
It doesn't.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, once again, people have decided, hey, you know what has value?
Me.
This thing. Let's fucking build a coin around it. I mean, like, you see all kinds of predictions about where this market's going to go. Is it going to go up? Is it going to go down? So on and so forth. I almost invested in this. Glad I didn't, because it's gone down pretty bad.
I think the answer to is it going to go up, is it going to go down, is yes.
Both. Yeah. You're probably right, because this market is so like ludicrously volatile. I wanted to kind of show Steemit here because this has been pretty cool for me. Has all kinds of other stuff tethered to it, like DTube and DSound and DLive and shit. Haven't used DLive yet. Not sure how that is. That's a streaming service where and like basically. They fucking aggregate like these Steem coins and the there's a derivative currency, this Steem dollars that was supposed to be worth $1 worth of Steem coin.
Okay.
But then speculators started driving the price of the Steem dollars up. So now they're worth more than that. You can even see on here. Like, it'll show you, like, a gist of, like, I put up my most recent video on this site before I put it on YouTube. I have this 5681 in fucking rewards, and that's $28.41 of Steem dollars.
Okay.
In that payout. And also some of it goes to my Steem power, which controls how much my upvotes are worth on the site.
That's weird.
And
so that's every creator. You can see exactly how much they're making per video, per post.
Yes.
It's all public.
Yeah. You can look at their supply.
It's 100% public. You could go and see how much they've made in the past, how much they've made now, how much is in their wallet. You know, it's totally transparent. There's no like there's no hiding it from people. which, you know, maybe that's a turn off, or maybe that's something that you think is cool. I don't know. But like the Steam dollar value, like since we've joined the site, has just been like, I joined it when it was at seven. Like I've been like, I said, when did I join this? I joined this shit on
like December or something.
I don't even know if
January.
I think it might have been early January, honestly. Let's see. 29 days ago. So I've been on there for a month now. And when I joined, the Steam dollar value was at like
$7 or $8,
something like that. Then it went down to three. I was like, man, their fucking value went down. Then it went up to like six. And currently it's sitting at $5.29 per Steam dollar.
So pretty good from where it was.
So like that $28 in fucking rewards is, you know, pretty much worth five times that. And you get it after 7 days. But then you have to transfer it into Bitcoin or something that people actually pay cash for.
Right.
That's a long process because Bitcoin's slow. But it's kind of cool because they're doing this whole thing about like, you know, it's just an alternative way of paying content creators, and they've kind of made it a censorship-free platform and shit. So, I mean, this is definitely the one I'm shilling for at this point because I've had such good luck with them.
I like the idea. It's an interesting idea. The transparency is kind of cool.
Yeah, because you kind of know
on YouTube, it's always like, you know, it's a big old secret what a video makes. You're not allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, you're discouraged by YouTube from even discussing that with your audience or anything. And this site is just right there in the open.
If YouTube actually still monetized any videos that weren't owned by giant corporations. You know, I was watching some videos and it was like, there was like some SNL sketches or some bullshit. And it was like everyone had a fucking get Spectrum Internet.
Get Spectrum.
Hey, what about these other fucking smaller content creators? They get dog shit.
Well, you know, they might be Muslim extremists or something.
You never know.
Yeah, one time someone did something bad on this site, so therefore everything has to change radically and hurt a bunch of people.
One time there was a Coke ad in an Al-Qaeda video, so now we can never have ads
again.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it's kind of cool to have a site that's just like, we don't give a shit. They pay in cryptocurrency, so I mean, like, depending on how you feel about cryptocurrency might be...
about that than I do fucking YouTube bullshit.
I agree with you on that.
I mean, YouTube is a fucking farce at this point. A fucking website that the rules change every fucking week. The standards are constantly shifting. You know, you can make a video like, hey guys, don't eat Tide Pods. Strike at your channel.
Yep.
But this person was just giving a scientific explanation. No, we are YouTube. Our policies make no sense. Here's a video about transgender children. Good, advertisers like this. Yeah. Monetize.
Yeah. Logan Paul laughing at a dead guy in the suicide forest. Yeah, go ahead and put that up.
I love how I know we're kind of digressing here, but whatever. I love how Logan Paul fucking found a dead guy in the fucking suicide forest, which I think was bullshit anyway. But assuming he actually did, he's like, oh, man, it's crazy. And people are like, all right, Logan, you got to take that video down, buddy.
You know what?
And then later when he got back, he's like, all right, I'm going to shock some dead rats. And they're like, all right, that's it. You're demonetized. Who's
okay, but I have
the
a question.
Rats was too far.
If the person who is dead is blurred, right?
Yeah.
Who the fuck is the victim of it?
The
person was already dead.
Everyone just hates Logan Paul and they're looking for.
I mean, yeah, he sucks. I totally agree with you on that point, but there's a dead body. And if it's blurred, like, the family can't say they showed our dead relative's body. It's like, this person's fucking dead. What else are you going to do to them? Like, they're fucking dead.
I think it was bullshit anyway.
Yeah. I don't even fucking care. It's like, there's like fucking such stupid fucking controversies. Like, hey, you know what we got going on? Infrastructure's crumbling. Healthcare system is the most expensive in the fucking world. We got all these problems. Some fucking wackos are going around just gunning people down the streets. But what did Logan Paul do today so I can be fucking self-righteous, virtue signaling, offended, whiny piece of shit?
I agree with you. Another thing is kind of cool. There's an article. I'm not going to bother putting it up on the screen, but It basically just says that Africa could be a burgeoning new market for cryptocurrency as well.
We can invent money that is worth money?
Yeah. So you see why they're getting into it.
Fuck it, it's cool.
Apparently there's been a huge surge in popularity of cryptocurrencies in Africa.
Well, you know what? I mean,
a lot of exchanges are actually located there.
They totally skipped as these African countries are developing. They totally skipped over having like standard, you know, brick and mortar banks. It's like they do a lot of stuff on mobile. And I mean, this is kind of a perfect fit for Africa because it allows people to just effortless transactions. Dude, instantly.
I quit the show. I'm taking all the money I've got, buying a ticket to Africa. I'm starting AfriCoin.
AfriCoin.
I'm going to be the one that unites AfriCoin, dude.
Here's a cool coin that I've always been fond of. I don't actually have anything invested in it because I've never really seen it do too crazy well, even though it was one of the first altcoins ever created. But it's called HempCoin. Its abbreviation is THC, which is really cool.
That's awesome.
Let me just put it up here on screen. HempCoin THC. HempCoin was among the first 30 currencies developed in 2014 and is highly focused digital currency for the agriculture, farming industry, and marijuana/hemp industry.
I want to buy some fucking HempCoin, dude.
Built on the source of Bitcoin, its use includes the marijuana dispensaries and the entire agriculture, farming, trade business. I'm pretty sure that they focus
this
pretty strongly on marijuana over other...
This needs to be fucking invested in by fucking anyone that has any intelligence, and I'll tell you exactly why. More and more states are going to legalize fucking weed. There's going to be more and more people growing this shit. Buy now while it's fucking cheap.
They need to get some better bud for their background image. That was some pretty stimmy-looking bud.
What is it worth now, TJ?
Right now, the price, let me see, it's 21 cents.
Oh, dude, that's nothing.
At its all-time high, I think that's probably about right here. Let me see. Looks like its ATH was about 73 cents back. Looks like that was in early January.
So if you buy it now, there's a good chance if you hold it long enough, you can sell it for more.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
So I would buy it, dude. Especially if it just dropped 19%. Beautiful. Let it drop more.
HODL. HODL.
Buy low, right,
so
sell
this
high.
Is kind of funny. This is Rasputin coin. And how this happened was we were talking about doing an episode on cryptocurrency and Rasputin. And Paul was kind of like, he's just like, man, I'm going to start Rasputin coin, dude. I'm like, I bet you it already exists. And he's like, nuh-uh. And I went and I looked it up. And of course,
it does.
It does exist.
Don't you like how like this episode has been one of the times that like if you like your half-baked ideas actually get foiled before you're like, but I'll fucking make an Africa coin.
Yeah.
Already exists. Rasputin online coin already exists.
Yeah.
TJ's a butt fucking faggot coin already exists.
Oh, it's all there. This is kind of I don't know anything about this coin. I think it's kind of similar to Steam. It looks like it's also tethered to online entertainment, but it's been all over the place.
Dude, I bet TJ's a faggot coin isn't taken, and we could back it like with the promise that TJ will continue to be a faggot.
Yeah.
Dude, that's
the
dude.
Higher it goes, the higher the value of my faggotry is.
Yeah. We've decided that TJ's faggotry is worth 64 cents this month.
Cool. I mean, it's up to the people to decide. Yeah, it looks like it's pretty much at its all-time high right now. I mean, it looks like maybe it's been a little higher than it is, but it's pretty high right now, this Rasputin coin. I don't know jack shit about it. I just know that it bears the name of the secondary topic that we're going to be discussing here today, which is Grigori Rasputin. I don't think we have anything left to say about Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies.
Well, I learned what a FUD was.
You...
Yeah, me.
You're a FUD.
I am. But you know what, dude? People need FUDs. The world needs FUDs like me.
You even kind of look like Elmer Fudd a little bit.
I look at the fucking dark side of everything, dude. You could walk up to me and hand me a crisp $100 bill, and I'd be like, what does this mean? What's the expectation that's put on this $100 bill?
Free comes with a dick in your ass.
See?
As they like. Say,
but that wouldn't be free though. You'd be giving them $100
anyway. I guess let's start off by taking a quick look at a video that we pulled. It's just a brief bio of Rasputin. starts with some pretty clouds in the sky.
It's pretty.
It's so beautiful.
Ori Rasputin. Mad monk.
Cool. What's this like?
Grigory Rasputin was a Russian Orthodox Christian and mystic, who people believed to be a psychic, a prophet, and a faith healer. It was thought that he helped in the fall of the Romanov dynasty by helping to discredit the Tsarist government. Rasputin was born in Siberia, and myths and stories say that throughout his childhood he showed indications of possessing supernatural powers. At around the age of 18, he spent 3 months in a monastery, and apparently had a vision of the Virgin Mary, and this led him to his new life as a wanderer
like,
and religious...
If you just see this, if you know nothing about Grigory Rasputin, and you just see this picture, it's like, point out the craziest fuck in the room.
Yep.
It would take you no time pretty whatsoever easy. To just be like, there he is. There he fucking
mystic.
Is.
In 1901, he left his wife and children to become a pilgrim. After traveling for 2 years, he arrived in St. Petersburg, where he started earning a reputation as a holy man with psychic powers. The Tsarista Alexandra called on Rasputin
good to
help
see
her.
Like, I've got a like Rasputin had a puby beard like mine.
Yeah.
I have a Rasputin beard. That's pretty cool.
Maybe you're going to find out something about your ancestry, Paul.
Fat Sputin.
Fat dude, Sputin.
Paul is fucking Fat Sputin, dude.
All right. If there's ever a DFF shirt, that's got
to
be
I have to have my eyes do this.
Can some artist out there in our audience please create a Fat Sputin design?
Yeah, not fast, TJ. A Fat Sputin.
I said Fat Sputin.
And Alexei.
Enunciate properly, you piece
every time
of shit.
That Alexei had internal or external bleeding, she would send for him, and subsequently Alexei got better.
TJ.
Many skeptics think this
learn
was
about
done
Rasputin,
by hypnosis.
Be quiet.
While many people were fascinated by him, he was not widely accepted, with many accusing him of evil or immoral practices.
He's such a boner for this guy.
I mean,
guy.
Just look at him, so of course.
God,
you know what? You know why you like him, TJ? Because this guy's an OG edgelord, dude.
Yeah, I mean, Rasputin's definitely an edgelord, dude. Look at him. Off.
Attaining Goth divine grace through sin seems to have been one of the secret central doctrines preached and practiced within his inner circle.
I mean, like, in every photo that he's in, his eyes are the photo. And they're just so fucking crazy piercing.
...of society ladies. To show the trust that the royal family had for him, they referred to him as our friend and holy man. He had a lot of political domination over the family, and while Tsar Nicholas went away to lead the troops during World War I, as Rasputin said that Russia would not succeed without him, Russia's economy declined at a rapid rate due to his influence over the Tsarista. The legend...
Well, that's why you don't give influence to a fucking nut job.
Yeah, dude, who's letting this dude, like, look over things while you're away at war?
All right. Crazy guy who thinks he's a psychic holy man. You got to hold down the fort of the country while I'm off fighting the war.
Religion, though. Religion.
All right, so
he's a man of God. You have to trust him.
Here's where I can actually provide a little insight in here, because I read a book about Rasputin.
I read a fucking book one time.
I read a fucking book.
What time?
Bitch.
I read a fucking book about this guy.
One of the three books I ever read was about Rasputin. And I remember one of the things I remember is that they... It wasn't. This is not exclusive to Russian Orthodox Christianity, but it was particularly prevalent at around this time of Rasputin's rise. People who were crazy or retarded were kind of looked at as being the chosen of God, especially crazy people. Like, because people thought their insane gibberish was because they were getting like messages from heaven, basically. So when Rasputin came and showed up and started doing his like fucking total gibberish, instead of being like, this is gibberish, people are like, wow, this is divinely inspired. This is obviously coming from God, because this is no man could come up with something this fucking crazy.
Doesn't this make you think, dude? Doesn't it make you just think, TJ, you were born too late, dude?
Yeah.
If you're born this time, TJ, you'd be fucking the Tsarina and shit, dude. You'd be fucking living high on the hog.
Yeah, dude. Like, in modern times, Rasputin probably would have just been a homeless dude.
Yeah, you know, he'd be at best, he'd be, like, running a YouTube channel with 70 subscribers. Be hanging out with Inmendum and shit, you know?
The legendary murder of Rasputin has many different stories, but most commonly told is that on December the 16th, 1916... A group of nobles and politicians.
Well, we actually have a separate video that just concerns itself with
that's true.
Death. So let's just go ahead and take a look at that.
Soon, Rasputin was Tsar above the Tsar.
Tsar above the Tsar.
Palace nobles, amid suspicions that Rasputin and the German-born Tsarina were plotting to make peace with Germany, conspired to do away with the mad mystic.
Probably a smart idea.
Yeah, I mean, someone was like, this guy has disproportional influence over the king. Or the emperor, or the czar, whatever the fuck you want to title it. You're basically the dictator of the country, if we're being honest.
I mean, the book that I read kind of leads one to believe that these people just had pre-existing problems with the czar and the royal family, and Rasputin looked creepy, so they were just basically like, look, this Rasputin guy is evil as shit, and he's doing all this horrible stuff. And they basically used him as a line of attack. Like, look at all the power he's given this Rasputin character and shit. And, you know, much like Caligula and these other, like, ultimate evil sort of figures, I mean, a lot of it is just mythologized by the enemies of the fucking...
But not long after, I mean, the Tsar was done away with anyways.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Bolshevik Revolution didn't happen that... What was it, 1917 or 18 or something? Or
very shortly after
After Rasputin's death. So, I mean, they're already gunning for the Tsar to begin with.
Yeah.
The leader of the assassination conspiracy was one of the wealthiest men in Russia, Prince Yusupov. On the night of December 29th, 1916, Yusupov and a cabal
of
nobles,
including
the zealot Purishkevich, held a party. Yusupov was able to lure Rasputin.
He looks way too nice there.
Yeah.
Beautiful young wife.
Looks like Jesus almost.
Yeah, he looks Christ-like.
In that room with the prince and Rasputin were 3 cakes and 2 glasses of wine, each of them laced with poison. The idea was that the cakes didn't get him, the wine...
Cyanide, by the way.
To cover the noise that could ensue, a record album was put on upstairs by the co-conspirators.
Who was going to hear in the middle of the palace, anyway?
George M. Cohan's sprightly I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. When a conspirator observed, that creature has swallowed enough cyanide to kill a regiment, a rattled Yusupov went to get his pistol and returned.
That was plan B?
So plan A was, we'll poison his cakes and we'll poison his wine.
Right. Bunch of cyanide, more than enough to kill him.
You know what, though? They never considered, you know, maybe they gave him so much. Maybe, like, you know, he had people that supported him that gave him, like, fake cyanide or something. Or maybe they didn't do it, you know, they made it a nerd in some way or something.
We actually have an article about how he might have survived being poisoned that much.
Yeah,
but,
really?
Yeah, but the way I heard the story was a little bit different than it's being told here. Now, it is kind of been... This is another thing that's probably mythologized.
Of course.
But basically, they didn't have the cakes and the wine with the poison at the same time. They did the cakes first. They brought him out some cakes, and apparently he didn't even want to eat them at first, but they kind of talked him into eating some of the cakes. And he ate, you know, one should have been enough to kill him. And he ate like 3 and he seemed totally fine. So like, all right, fuck this. Go get some wine. We'll lace that with cyanide, too. They brought that to him. He drinks that. He's still fine. They're just like, what the fuck? So at Damn. That point, they're just like, OK, well, I guess we're just going to have to shoot him. And I think that's where we're going to pick up here.
Yusupov pulls out his revolver and shoots Rasputin in the chest. Rasputin falls to the floor.
Why not the head?
So they shoot him in the chest. He falls to the floor. I don't know. Maybe just because the chest's a bigger target.
Doctor pronounced him dead, and they went back upstairs for a celebratory glass of wine. All right,
he's dead. Let's drink.
During this time, Prince Felix had a uncanny feeling that something was wrong and went back into the room, looked at Rasputin, shook him, and at that time, Rasputin opened his eyes that Prince Felix described as green viper eyes. Rasputin then ran across the courtyard, Purishkevich following him and firing 4 shots, the first 2 of which missed, the second 2 hit him, the first one in the back, the second one in the head, at which point...
So they tried to poison him, didn't work,
yeah.
Tried to shoot him. Basically didn't work the first time. Had to go back and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And they had to shoot him again. And some accounts say it went on even beyond this. Let me see what this
all
one says.
Congregated around him, were kicking him, and then wrapped the body in the carpet and bound him up and took him over to the Neva River where they dumped his body in and was discovered the next day.
Poisoned, stabbed, beaten, and shot, he still broke his bonds and smashed his way through thick ice. Only drowning finally stopped him.
Yeah, so that's the legend.
All right. So he wasn't even dead when they threw him
so
in the river.
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of referenced in Ghostbusters 2 with Ego, the Carpathian or whatever. Yeah. Like they had like the ridiculous over the top amount of things it took to kill him. And basically it's like they tried to poison him with cakes. Didn't work. They tried to poison him with wine. Didn't work. They shot him. Didn't work. They shot him some more. Didn't work.
They beat him.
They beat him. They drowned him. And finally it was drowning what finally disposed of him.
Wow.
Now, an autopsy was actually conducted of Rasputin after his death. There was no poison in his system. There was only one bullet hole, and it was in his head. There was no water in his lungs. So what probably really happened is they invited him there, they shot him in the head and threw him in the
room. Yeah, and then you know, people at the, you know, they bought into the mythology. They did all this to him, they did this to him. It's like,
well, they get, because the killers themselves, that Prince Yusupov or whatever his fucking name was, gave this account of like, oh, he did this and he did that and he did, but it was all part of the mythologizing. It was
they probably said it was like satanic or something. They
wanted to make him look more evil than he was.
Yeah, demonic or something.
Like he's this demonic sort of not even really human creature that, you know, this ordeal to kill him. But in reality, they sat him down and they shot him in the back.
That's what I'm saying. Like, let's say like for some reason wanted to kill somebody. Like if three of us said, okay, we're going to kill some random person, you know, or whatever. All we're going to do is something like that. It's like, okay, invite them there and shoot them. We're not going to be like, we shot him seven times and poisoned him and did this. Like, no, those things are all going to kill somebody. Cyanide is going to kill a person very quickly.
But assuming that version of events is somehow true, we do have a hypothesis as to how he would have survived the poisoning. Sure. And let's take a look at that real quick. Poison, shot, and beaten. Why cyanide alone may have failed to kill Rasputin. Okay. Let's just find the relevant part here. What is known is that one evening Rasputin went to Yusupov Palace in St. Petersburg. Blah, 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 blah. All right, so they shot him, and this just recounts the story.
All right, so there we go.
All right, so here's where they start to talk about...
Yeah, the whole account sounds fanciful from start to finish, but with remarkable things do happen. Human beings have achieved incredible physical feats in spite of horrible injuries. During a duel in the 16th century, one man received a stab wound directly to the heart, but still managed to run 230 yards to chase down his opponent before collapsing. Maybe Rasputin really was still alive after the first shot and capable of a fight. I mean, maybe...
But what about the poison?
Surely no one could eat so much cyanide with so little effect. So, I mean, yeah, it does seem very fanciful. I mean, maybe there's another possibility, but I guess let's read a little bit more.
All right. It says there's actually several possibilities that have been brought up.
You want to go ahead? You want me to read it?
Go ahead.
The theory as to why cyanide didn't kill Rasputin are almost as numerous as the theories of how he really died. What is surprising is that the theories are scientifically credible. So I guess there are some credible theories. The first theory is that the poisoners were simply rubbish at their job, which is, that's kind of what I posited initially.
Right.
Either they didn't use enough or the cyanide they had was old stock that had been decayed into something far less toxic. Though plausible, a century after the events, it is impossible to tell if this is true. The second theory is that Rasputin, aware that someone might be trying to kill him, he had survived at least one assassination attempt already, had decided to protect himself against poison. Perhaps he was inspired by Mithridates. Was it Mithridates?
Yeah.
I think it's Mithridates.
Yeah, Mithridates, king of, Pontus?
Yep.
In the first century BC, who feared, fearful of poisoners, concocted an antidote of preventative. By ingesting his sublethal amounts of every known poison, he had developed an immunity. When Mithridates was under a threat from the local populace, he tried to kill himself with poison, but the attempt failed and he had to request that a guard kill him with a sword. So wonderful. So, I mean, that seems kind of far-fetched for that to even happen, but I guess it's possible.
I mean, a lot of times poisons just build up in your body over time.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily get an immunity. Although you can. I mean, like, they
sure. What is it, like venom and stuff? Like, people can be... be exposed to enough venom.
I mean,
I've
seen episodes of Forensic Files and shit where someone will have like 10 times the lethal dose in their system because they were poisoned slowly over time.
Oh, yeah. So. It was an episode we saw with arsenic. They kept giving this woman arsenic trioxide. I think it was just rat poison. And that she received enough where, like, if she had received it like directly in one dose, she would have died. But the guy, her husband, kept poisoning her for so long that she did just build
little bits.
Yeah. he'd make her soup and he puts them in there. And he's like, why isn't she dead? But it was because he poisoned her slowly over time.
Yeah, you're better off. If you want to poison someone, you're just better off using a massive dose at one time.
But then you're going to be found out when they have an autopsy for why a perfectly healthy human died.
The third theory is that Rasputin had alcoholic gastritis, which can lead to having less stomach acid. Without acid in the stomach, the potassium cyanide can't be converted into hydrogen cyanide and is therefore considerably less toxic. It's another plausible explanation, but no one really knows if Rasputin suffered from this complaint or not. The fourth theory, God, there's a lot of theories,
yep,
is that poisoners unintentionally gave him the antidote along with the poison. Studies have shown that rats fed sugar with cyanide fare a lot better than those fed cyanide without it. The theory, though not proven, is that sugar binds to the cyanide in a way that allows its excretion before it can be fully absorbed into the body. The assassins therefore may have chosen poorly when they elected to deliver the cyanide in sugary cakes and wine. The final theory is that Yusupov made the whole thing up and Rasputin was simply shot shortly after he arrived at the palace by a person or persons unknown. This is probably much nearer the truth, but it isn't nearly as interesting as stories of an unkillable monk. Well, yeah, I think that's kind of the theory I go with. I know it's not the most exciting or interesting version of the theory, but
the truth is boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
It's like they say in the man who shot Liberty Valance, I think. When the legend becomes fact, print the legend.
Yeah, print the legend, dude.
So,
and that's what they did with Rasputin, almost certainly.
But I mean, it's kind of neat that there is at least a few plausible explanations for how he could have survived being poisoned with cyanide.
I mean, they're unlikely, but they're at least interesting. It's something to examine.
The most awesome one, I think, is the idea that he poisoned himself to build an immunity.
He prepped himself for it. He just took a little cyanide every day.
Yep. I mean, of course, they don't go with the best theory of all, that he was just an instrument of the devil.
Yeah. He was just possessed by Beelzebub himself.
All right. So, obviously, just from the brief stuff we've looked at so far, you can kind of tell that Rasputin's life has been mythologized to a great degree.
Yep.
One of the things that biography didn't get into, and none of this stuff that we've even looked at has gotten into, is his reported sexual prowess. But I think we'll probably get into that as we approach the Rasputin's penis segment.
Rasputin's penis segment.
The life
on DFF.
This is from an article called Five Myths and Truths about Rasputin.
Okay.
Shit, dude. Give us some fucking truth, TJ.
The life and death of Grigory Efimovich Rasputin. Let's see. So myth number one, he had mystical powers.
That is not a myth.
What? That's a myth. Come on now.
Born to peasants in a small village in western Siberia, the young Rasputin turned to religion early in his life. Even as a child, rumors among the local populace were that Rasputin had certain mystical gifts. Basically, it's because he was crazy.
Right.
Like I said earlier, like, craziness was viewed as an indicator, like, this child is blessed by Gord.
Yeah, I mean, well, you're dealing with people who are completely uneducated, can't read or write, and, you know, there's some babbling kid, and it's all like, he done got the magical powers.
Despite marrying and fathering several children, Rasputin abandoned family life in search of Orthodox Christian religious devotion and piety. Following years of wandering and religious teaching, Rasputin ended up in St. Petersburg, the seat of royal power. Through various connections, Rasputin became known as Tsar Nicholas and by Tsar Nicholas and his wife, the Tsarina Alexandra. Desperate to find a cure for their ailing son's hemophilia, one might have called upon Rasputin. After his session with the young boy, the bleeding seemed to stop for some time. Some historians, such as Pierre Gilliard, have speculated that the bleeding likely stopped as a result of Rasputin's insistence on disallowing the administration of aspirin, a known blood-thinning agent, and not any mystical powers he may have had. The Tsarina was amazed and immediately enlisted the services of Rasputin as a close advisor.
So he just accidentally came to the right medical conclusion.
You know what? It really sounds like it's a case of the right place, the right time, the right level of insanity, and just being like, we want to give him some aspirin for pain. No.
let me use my powers, and then they don't give him the aspirin, which is a blood thinner.
Well, I think they said, I think they attributed the time to, like, the meditation or the music he played or something. It was like, he knew how to calm him or something and stop the bleeding.
Well, basically, I mean, like, they had a problem, I mean, because of the inbreeding in the royal family.
With the European bloodlines, all these families, basically, only, you know, the kings married, their offspring after other kings, so the bloodlines were all very closely associated.
And when you do that, it's way more likely for recessive illnesses to take hold, and hemophilia was kind of a major problem among the royal families, and Tsar Nicholas's son had hemophilia, and his bleeding was a big problem, and they felt that Rasputin could cure that. Now, is it just because he didn't give him the aspirin, or did Rasputin have some sort of other secret? Who knows? But it probably was not mystical powers.
Yeah, but I mean, how ingratiated, you know, especially as the king of a country going to be, where it's like, our child may die, and this guy can supposedly just keep him death at bay.
I think it was his crazy eyes. Rasputin comes in and ooga boogas over him, and suddenly he's better.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to give that a lot of fucking weight.
I think that was his only son as well, so...
Well, yeah, that's also his legacy. That's like, you know, this is the next leader of this country in his mind. Obviously, that did not how that played out.
Yeah, it didn't play out that way.
But it had for generations played out that way.
Myth number two, he was a sexual deviant and the queen's lover.
Oh,
I hope that one's
yeah.
true, dude.
Fuck that. That's real.
It's real. Come on.
Tales of Rasputin's sexual exploits began to spread early in his time with the royal court, as his eccentric behavior, like drinking heavily and visiting brothels, was seen to clash with his religious piety. According to some historians who believe Rasputin may have been a member of, or at least influenced by, the Clist? I don't know how that's pronounced. The Clit religious sect. Such sinful behavior brought him closer to God. Okay.
Dude, I like that sect.
That's an awesome sect. However, though he did frequently entertain in salons, there is no evidence to suggest Rasputin was a sex-crazed maniac who had a secret affair with the Russian queen.
Why not?
Much like the rest of his life, his behavior in this realm has been exaggerated and, following the February Revolution of 1917, embellished by his enemies in attempts to propagandize his life. That's pretty shitty propaganda.
Yeah, he was a fuck demon.
Man, he was just,
man, he could just fuck a chick till she fucking screamed and then just keep on going, man. He was a fucking deviant.
I mean, it was
the brothel.
Coxman.
He cleaned the brothel out. He fucked it. He fucked all the bitches to submission.
Yeah, I mean, like, they basically said that,
like, what?
Women were irresistibly drawn to him because they fucking would just look into his crazy intense eyes and their fucking pussies would just get wet, almost like they were possessed by a demon. And then he would fuck them to the point where they would come so hard they would pass out.
Damn.
That was Yeah, that's what a horrible rumor to spread about your enemies.
So
right?
When I'm dead, you guys are free to spread those rumors about me.
Scotty could fuck any bitch unconscious.
Hey, you know, go ahead. Spread that
was his sexual
prowess. Spread that around town. That's
disgusting.
That's fine.
Freak.
You guys know that asshole TJ? That fucking retard fucks like a beast. Oh my God, dude. Chicks can't resist his dick. What a fucking loser.
What a loser. I hate that guy.
Yeah,
a fucking faggot, dude.
Weird times in Russia. Myth number three, he was Russia's secret ruler. Because of his constant presence in the royal court, whispers grew that Rasputin was acting as a puppet master over the royal couple. And I mean, basically, this did happen. I mean, they basically just said, like, Rasputin was pulling all the strings and he was controlling the Tsar and all this shit. And I mean, it was really just the Tsar's enemies who wanted to usurp him from power, who were spreading the rumors because, you know, Rasputin, I mean, if you just look at him, it's pretty easy to see why he was an easy target.
Yeah, crazy eyes drew the scapegoat target, became a satanic monk that was controlling the royal family.
Well, also, they had a good argument because they're like, well, look, his son, if Rasputin is around, he's possessing his son, he's using witchcraft and, you know, all this shit. We got to get rid of him.
I mean, it's true that Rasputin did actually have a good bit of power as an advisor to the Tsarina.
Sure.
Once Nicholas came back, though, that kind of came to an end because he kind of realized that Rasputin was a liability at some point. Myth number four is that he's impossible to kill. I think we've already explored that pretty well. This is myth number five. He rose from the dead.
Whoa.
Much like the tale of his murder, the aftermath of Rasputin's death has been mythologized over the years. According to the legend, after Rasputin's poisoned and shot body was thrown in the icy river, he was fished out by a group of passersby who found that he was still alive when they dragged his body to the shore of the river. It just keeps getting crazier and crazier. God. However, the truth is that Rasputin's already deceased corpse was thrown into the Malaya Nevka River. Fucking Russian words. It took days for the police to find the body because the water had already frozen in the sub-zero Russian winter. On March 15th, 1917, Tsar Nicholas II abdicated the Russian throne as a result of the February Revolution. The following year, Bolsheviks eliminated the last vestiges of the Romanov dynasty. But myths about Rasputin have endured. And underneath those myths, there does reside some truth. Several historians have speculated that Rasputin's influence did indeed play a role in the contempt for the royal household and everything it came to represent. The tale of Rasputin indeed shows that mythology can take a life on its own and grow to become more important than the truth.
It's kind of a similar conclusion that we came to on Caligula as well.
Yes.
That, you know, political enemies kind of, history is written by the victors, so.
Well, of course. You know, they're not going to write the person they fucking deposed was a great guy, and they just had to get rid of him because, you know, like, oh, look, you know, we do a better job. It was no.
And we wanted power.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, the truth never. Yeah, I mean, but that's really what the reason is. And the same thing with, like, the czars and, you know, these monarchies to begin with. It was an idea that was good for a time, and now it's become antiquated in a lot of parts of the world, but not all of them.
Perhaps spurned on by these rumors surrounding the difficulty of to kill Rasputin, there was a... I don't even know if this is true, because once again, the rumors around him just swirl, but it's said that the noble class eventually dug up his body and beat it and shot it some more after he was already buried because they just wanted to make super sure that he is in fact dead.
Well, it is Russia.
So,
you know,
they hated this guy so much. They dug him up and murdered
him
again.
That's like the Pope, dude. The Pope they put on trial when he was dead, and they had like a little choir boy answering for the Pope. Like, why did you do these heinous things? Because Satan made me and I'm evil. You know,
Dude,
we have to do some DFFs on some popes, dude. There's some fucking crazy shit that popes have done and were done to them.
Find us some crazy popes.
That's not hard to find. It's been around for 2,000 years.
All right, so here is a little art. This is just something that Rasputin wrote as a last will and testament.
Okay.
And it's kind of interesting because a lot of the things he said are predictions about the future, and I guess you could judge for yourself the accuracy of these predictions. I write this letter, the last letter, which will be left after me in St. Petersburg. I have a premonition that I will die before 1st of January, 1917.
He was killed on the 30th of December.
Yep. So he was actually killed very shortly before that date. I speak to the Russian people, to Papa. That's how he referred to Nikolai. To mama and children, to all of the Russian land, what they should know and understand. If I will be killed by ordinary people, especially by my brothers, the Russian peasants, then you, the Russian Tsar, should not worry about your children. They will lead in Russia another 100 years. But if I am murdered by the boyars and noblemen, if they spill my blood and it stays upon their hands, then 25 years will pass before they will be able to wash my blood from their hands. They will have to flee from Russia. Brother will kill brother. Everyone will kill each other and hate each other. And at the end of 25 years, not one nobleman will be left in Russia. Tsar of the Russian land, if you hear the ringing of the funeral bell at the death of Grigori, then know, if in my death are guilty, whatever, someone of your relatives, then I tell you that none of your family, none of your children and relatives will live any more than 2 years. And if they live, they will pray to God for death, for they will see the disgrace and shame of the Russian land, the arrival of the Antichrist, pestilence, poverty, desecrated temples of God, holy places spit upon, where everyone will become a corpse. 3 times 25 years will the black bandits, servants of the Antichrist, destroy the people of Russia and the faith of the Orthodox Church, and the Russian land will perish, and I perish. I have perished already, and I am no longer among the living. Pray, pray, be strong. Think of your blessed family. So here's all the predictions. I will die before the 1st of January.
And it says, if the will and testament are authentic.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, this is...
This may just be another...
This may be someone...
More propaganda.
Rewriting history, yeah. Or, you know, whatever.
But we've already kind of accepted that with Rasputin, who knows? I will die before 1st of January. He was killed on December 30th. So, that came true. If I'm murdered by boyars and noblemen, which he was... At the end of 25 years, not one nobleman will be left in Russia. The person interpreting the letter is not sure about this one. Obviously, a lot of fucking noblemen did die.
Yep.
Brother will kill brother. Everyone will kill each other. That happened. Big fucking communist revolution and shit. None of your family, none of your children and relatives will live for more than 2 years. We know the whole Romanov family was pretty much wiped out.
Yep. Within 2 years of Rasputin's death.
Disgrace and shame on the Russia land. I guess they say it depends on your point of view. I think you could make a strong case.
Yeah.
Arrival of the Antichrist. They interpret that as being Lenin or Stalin. I would say Stalin's probably a better candidate than Lenin.
Yeah.
Destruction of the Russian people. I mean, maybe that's a little bit up for interpretation. Destruction of the Orthodox faith. I mean, Christianity was definitely persecuted under communism. Poverty and pestilence, yep. Desecrated temples of God. As it says here, Stalin did destroy many churches and shit. And not only that, but basically stripped them of all power because they competed with the state.
Interesting. So, once again, this whole letter could just be something released after his death to kind of back up the story.
You're obsolete, TJ. The state has found you to be obsolete, TJ.
Obsolete. Yeah, so, I mean, it's like, once again, it's like, I don't know. Who knows? Did he really write that? And if so, was he just making educated guesses based on what was going on?
If it's true, I would estimate that. Because, I mean, if he had any idea what the political climate was at that time, I mean, we're talking about right on the cusp of a major fucking revolution. So it's not like the rumblings aren't already there. I mean, a revolution doesn't happen.
Yeah, a revolution didn't just pop up out of nowhere.
It wasn't just like, I'm content. You know what? Now I'm not content. Revolution! That's not how these things work. I mean, Lenin, you know, was in exile, I think, in Germany at the time. And all these, you know, these people were planning, these actions were being planned actively. So if it was, he was probably just astute enough to realize that the times were changing and the Tsar's days were probably numbered.
Times, they are a-changing. All right, so... let's get to the most fun part. Now, we talked a little bit about Rasputin's sexual prowess, his ability to fuck the shit out of women until they exploded based on the horrible, slanderous lies.
Propaganda.
Yeah. So here's a little article. This is called Rasputin's Penis, Hoax or Not. You might have heard the rumors that Rasputin's penis is... on display somewhere.
Yep.
And apparently there is a museum of erotica in Russia, of all places. It's been crowing about his acquisition of the penis of Rasputin, the mad mystic lover of the wife of the Russian Tsar, which is not confirmed, whatever. A photo accompanying the man, many reports about the unusual exhibit show an attractive woman staring rather in awe at the large, grotesque thing as it floats in formaldehyde.
Cool.
Which I'll show you the picture in a moment. It definitely looks like a penis, but is it Rasputin's penis, which, according to legend, was 13 inches long? As it turns out, Rasputin's penis has had a rather colorful history since its separation from his body. Here are some of the highlights. In 1916, Rasputin and his penis parted ways due to the machinations of a murdering gang of angry nobles. See, there was rumors at the time that his killers had chopped off his dick. But once again, the autopsy that was done of his body, they said that his dick was present and accounted for.
You know, it's kind of like there's, you know, Catholic churches have relics and shit, you know, oh, they have this statue or this thing. I mean, this is probably what the case with this penis. It's just a fucking ploy to get people in, like, this is Rasputin's penis, you know.
But according to a rumor,
According to a rumor.
A maid found the bodiless member at the crime scene and saved it.
Oh, come on.
Dude, the maid just found a big old 13-inch dong.
Like, oh.
She's like, I can't let this go to waste. During the 1920s, a group of Russian women living in Paris acquired it, or acquired something they believed to be his penis,
so,
and worshipped it.
So basically,
wait a minute, hold on.
A bunch of suckers got scammed, but go on.
A group of Russian women living in Paris acquired it and worshipped it as a holy relic.
Okay.
While keeping it inside a wooden casket. Okay. So there's like, if you went to 1920s Paris, you could have found a group of Russian women who were part of a weird religious cult that worshipped Rasputin's dick.
Sweet.
Whether it was actually his dick or not.
Just want to point out that none of us have achieved worship, but this guy's dick achieved the state of being deified.
Rasputin's daughter, Marie, didn't like the idea of her dad's penis hanging out with these women, so she demanded the thing back. So now there's a custody battle over the holy penis. And it presumably stayed with her until she died in California in 1977. Wow. It's kind of weird to think of Rasputin's daughter alive in 1977.
Yeah.
In Cali, dude.
Yeah, hanging out in Cali. But I guess that's the facts. It then disappeared for a while until it came into the possession of Michael Augustine, who found it tucked away in a velvet pouch along with some of Marie Rasputin's manuscripts that he bought at a lot sale. Augustine sold the well-traveled penis to Bonham's auction house, who then discovered, surprise, surprise, that what they had bought was not a penis, but instead a sea cucumber. That's where events stood in 1994. Now, 10 years later, the Russian Museum of Erotica is claiming that they have Rasputin's penis.
Wow. They
so
found
wait,
it.
The lineage of that penis that we just read was just a sea cucumber.
Yes.
But they
so
found
that was
the
all
real...
a big discrepancy. But then years and years later, this fucking random museum has found the real dick. Okay, makes sense.
Clickbait. So what, is there a picture of this
there
fucking...
Is. Hold on, I want to just finish this up.
Quote, unquote, his penis.
Igor Knyazkrela, the director of the museum, claims that he bought it from a French antiquarian for $8,000, which just begs the question, where did this French antiquarian get the penis from?
Dude, the dick-worshipping cult of bitches gave the wrong... They sent a sea cucumber back to Rasputin's daughter. She demanded it back, and they were like, all right, fine. We'll just send her a sea... And they kept worshiping that shit. That's why it came from Paris.
Oh,
see, it's the dick.
Shit. Yep, you're right. They just sent her a fake... They just sent her a...
Yeah.
Yep, it makes sense to me.
See?
One might also wonder why the museum's penis is preserved in fluid, whereas all early accounts of Rasputin's penis describe it as dried out.
Hmm.
Who knows? Maybe it's because...
Maybe it got rehydrated.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so here, let's... You guys can take a look.
Holy... Shplumoli. Holy shplumoli.
There's no way, dude.
Wow. Rasputin.
That's like a baby elephant's fucking trunk, dude.
Fuck?
Dude, someone just fucking killed like a fucking baby elephant fetus and said this is Rasputin's penis. There's no fucking way, dude. He has like a fucking horse's penis, dude. There's
what a
no-
stud. Look at him.
It looks like a fucking yam.
There's no way, dude.
No wonder those bitches in Paris were worshiping this thing. God damn. Holy shit.
I'm sorry. I do not believe that for a second.
You could pull that thing out of that pickle jar and beat somebody to death with that dick.
I think you could.
Holy shit. Rasputin, stay away from my wife.
Well, he's dead, Paul.
All right. No, I mean, that doesn't matter for Rasputin, dude. He's probably still alive. He's just about to pop out of his grave.
Well, if he's
jaunt around town,
he's probably about to go to that fucking museum and get his cock back.
Dude, that'd be a great plot for a movie. Rasputin rises from the dead to reclaim his dick.
That would be. Yeah, I like it.
Anyway, that's been Deep Fat Fried. Hope you enjoyed our conversations about cryptocurrency and Rasputin.
And his penis.
And Rasputin's mighty, probably not really his penis.
His elephant trunk penis.
Wow. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Become a patron, you fools.